2 Samuel 18 in our Bibles is where we're going to. We're going to start in verse 5 and go down to verse 14. And tonight we're talking about this, the bad advice given by Joab. Which doesn't surprise you. Joab is Mr. Pragmatic. If there's any Mr. Pragmatic in the Bible, it's Joab. He was not a well-principled person. He was way too pragmatic and ended up suffering for that. But 2 Samuel in our Bibles, I'm going to start in verse 5. I'm going to read down to verse 14. 2 Samuel chapter 18, I'll begin in verse 5. And the king commanded Joab and Abishai and Ittai, saying, "Deal gently for my sake with a young man, even with Absalom." And all the people heard when the king gave all the captains charge concerning Absalom. So the people went out into the field against Israel, and the battle was in the wood of Ephraim, where the people of Israel were slain before the servants of David. And there was there a great slaughter that day of 20,000 men. For the battle was there scattered over the face of all the country. And the wood devoured more people that day than the sword devoured. And Absalom met the servants of David. And Absalom rode upon a mule, and the mule went under the thick boughs of a great oak. And his head caught hold of the oak, and he was taken up between the heaven and the earth, and the mule that was under him went away. And a certain man saw it, and told Joab, and said, "Behold, I saw Absalom hanged in an oak." And Joab said to the man that told him, "And behold, thou sawest him, and why didst thou not smite him there to the ground? And I would have given thee 10 shekels of silver and a girdle." And the man said to Joab, Though I should receive 1,000 shekels of silver in my hand, yet would I not put forth my hand against the king's son. For in our hearing the king charged thee and Abishai and Ittai, saying, 'Beware that none touch the young man Absalom. Otherwise I should have wrought falsehood against my own life. For there is no matter hid from the king, and thou thyself wouldest have set thyself against me.' Then said Joab, 'I may not tarry thus with thee.'" In other words, "I don't have time to mess with you." That's basically what he's saying. "And he took 3 darts in his hand and thrust them through the heart of Absalom while he was yet alive in the midst of the oak." So we'll talk about tonight this bad advice given by Joab. Now, the premise of seeking advice, we've said this in different lessons as we've gone through it. The premise of getting advice, seeking advice, and the idea of seeking good advice, We do this prior, before making the decision. We have a decision to make, so we seek out advice, and then we, from that advice, we try to make the best decision possible. Now, afterwards, after you make a decision, you ever heard the statement, "Hindsight is 20/20"? So you can always look back, and hopefully you do, and you learn some things from looking back. So you're going in to make a decision. So you seek out counsel. You come to what you think is the best possible decision to make based on godly counsel. And you make a decision. Now, after you've made a decision, whatever the situation may be, you will most likely learn from that decision. And maybe even be wiser and say, "Okay, here's what I did. I sought advice. I thought I did this was best, but now I've learned some things afterwards." So you will learn from what you have done, and maybe something you could have done different that might have been better the next time. There's an old statement. Will Rogers said it this way. It's somewhat a famous statement. Good judgment comes from experience, and a lot of that comes from bad judgment. So you, and that's a little bit more extreme than we're taking it, but you make a decision. You learn from it so that next time you can even make a better, not necessarily that was a bad one, but now you can make a better one. And that there's wisdom to that. So you learn some things you could have done different, and also you learn some things you did right. You may look back and say, "Boy, thank God I made that decision. I did not know how important that decision was." I can tell you that in my life. And I tell you, some of the most important decisions I ever made, I didn't know how important it was until I'm looking back and I realized it was a big V in the road. I didn't know it. I was just making the decision I thought was the right decision. Looking back, I realized, man, that was an important decision, and I learned something from it. Boy, that was the right thing to do in that situation. So you'll learn some things to do different, which is good, and you'll learn some things that you did right. The Lord helped you make the right decision. You got some good counsel to make the right decision. That's Part of that is the value of living long-term for Jesus. We're very transactional as people. You know, we do something today and we want to see the complete result of it tomorrow. But that's not always the way it is in the Christian life. Sometimes you've got to live for the Lord decades before you really see all of the value of good, godly decisions and how it makes an impact in your life. And so, after you make this decision, you got the advice, you made a decision, you learned some things you could have done different, which is good, you should, and you learned some things that you did right, which is a blessing. Now, one way we learn from these decisions that we make is by getting advice after the decision. So we got advice before the decision, we made a wise decision, and then we get some advice after the decision. Now, even though you sought advice prior to it, later you may come across people who you didn't know had maybe some input. You said, boy, I guess I wish I had talked to you before I made that decision. I didn't know that you knew something about that. Or maybe you didn't even know them. Maybe you made a decision at some point in time, and then later in life your paths crossed, and they said, hey, you know, maybe that some decision came up in conversation. They say, well, let me tell you some things I learned. And then you say, okay, well, I gained some. So if I make that decision again, I'm better for it. And so you learn, you get advice even after the decision, and that helps you grow in your wisdom and helps you make better decisions. And that can be very helpful. So there is wisdom in listening to this. Now, watch the phrase I use, because I'm going to counter this in a moment. I'll show you another side of this. So there is wisdom in listening to this. Here's the phrase I'm using. After decision advice. So you got advice. You made a decision. And now you've gotten some advice after the decision. Sometimes you may be sought for it. Sometimes we've done this at church. I've talked to other people doing it in different situations. A few years ago, well, it's like 8 years ago now, we did a church-wide survey. Some of you might remember that. And we asked for some thoughts about different things. And it was beneficial. And so you make some decisions, and then you maybe do a survey or something and get some feedback from people, and you gain some from that. And so that's all good. So that kind of... Now, don't lose me. I am going somewhere. You're looking at me kind of funny. I am going somewhere. Other than home in a few minutes, okay? So stay with me. So here's kind of what the dynamic looks like. So you have a problem of some sort. Now, all of this implies that we're praying through it. The word prayer isn't there. I don't want people to say, Pastor White, you ought to be praying. Okay, I agree. We ought to be praying. That's included in all these things as we work through it. So we have a problem. We gather facts, which is good. You ought to have some facts about what's going on before you ask for advice. Because people who you go to advice for is going to ask you some questions, and they're going to expect you to know some things about what you're asking them. So you have a problem. You gather as many facts you can about what the situation is, possible different outcomes or decisions or a way you could do different things. So you have a problem. You gather facts. Then you go seek counsel. Then you have to make a decision. Sometimes, let me tell you this, for some people, this is the big hang-up in life. They just won't make a decision. They just spin their wheels and never make a decision. But you need to make a decision, and then you learn from it. This is a very valuable part of decision-making. You learn from it after you make it. Now, that's this part of the dynamic. Now, let's talk about this other side, which is really the focus of the Bible study. I wanted to explain this side because this is the positive side. I don't want people to think that we never listen or never learn. We do listen, we do learn. But we need also understand the bad side of this. So we made a decision, and now we've gotten advice after the decision, and we've learned from it, we've grown from it. But here's the other side. Yet, there are others, certain people, who will criticize by always second-guessing whatever decision you make. It doesn't matter what decision. If you choose A, they're going to say, yeah, I told you, you should have chose B. Should have listened to me. Wait a minute, you didn't say anything until after I chose A. If you chose B, they're going to tell you you should have chose A. They're armchair quarterbacks, always trying to second guess, always critical. That just makes them feel good by telling you how bad you are. So there are others who will criticize, always second guessing, again, I have that in my air quotes, second guessing whatever decision you make. They do not approach this second guessing with the spirit of encouragement. Their focus is not to encourage you and help you. So they don't approach it with the spirit of encouragement, but the spirit of arrogance. They just want you to know that they're a little smarter, a little better, a little bit more on the ball than you are. And so, there's another dynamic. If we add to this one we have on the wall, here's the other part of that dynamic. So, we have a problem, we gather facts, seek counsel, make a decision, learn from it, and then we endure second guessers. That's just always going to be that way. And a lot of times people, and we'll kind of see this in the Bible study, they don't want to make a decision because they know this is going to happen. But if all you're going to do is focus on this and not make a decision, you're not going to get very far trying to do some things for the Lord. So that's just the reality of it. You have to endure second guessers. So some people are fearful to make a decision because they know they're going to be criticized by these second guessers. So this prevents them from making good decisions because they're not making any decision. But if I don't make any decision, here's the other thing, I'm not learning from those decisions. I'm not going forward in my Christian life. I'm not learning some things the Lord would have me to learn. So not only am I not making good decisions, but I'm not learning from my decisions, or even maybe it being a bad decision, something I could learn from. So, here's the crux of the Bible study. How do we separate this good side, okay, which I'm calling the after-decision good advice? Okay, I'll put that in air quotes again. The after decision good advice. Okay, this is positive. This is good. If someone comes to you with a good attitude and a good spirit and tries to help you, you ought to receive it as it was given and learn from it. Okay, so this is good. After decision good advice. After decision good advice. Okay, that's the positive. How do we separate that from the negative, which is the second guesser's bad advice? Because no matter what you do, they're going to criticize it. So how do we separate the two? Because they're both coming to us afterwards, telling us something. We don't want to ignore everything, because then we're not going to learn some things. But if we just open ourselves up to everything, we're going to end up being very discouraged and bitter and antagonistic towards people. So how do we separate this? Well, the same thing. Now watch this. Here's the whole Bible study in a sentence. The same thing that always, so how do we separate these two things? It's the same thing that always separates good and bad advice. What separates good advice from bad advice? Knowing and applying biblical principle. Same thing is true in this situation. When we are confident of the biblical principles behind our decisions, it doesn't mean we're not always, okay, sometimes you have the principle right, but you don't have the procedure right. And so you make a decision and it didn't really turn out, even though you knew the principle, but you didn't apply it maybe exactly as it should have been applied. But that's different than just being, you know, helter-skelter and oblivious and just doing whatever. So if you are confident, okay, you have some confidence of biblical principles behind the decisions, then if something we learn from it, we say, okay, I'm not changing the principle, but I understand better how this principle should work or apply or should be used in this situation. So if I'm confident of the biblical principle behind the decision, then we can learn from these people or from this situation, and also we can reject those who try to criticize the principle. The principle is not wrong. The principle is in the Bible. Maybe my application wasn't the best, but the principle is very biblical. And so if I'm confident of the principle, and then when someone comes to me and says, hey, let me help you understand how to apply that better, then I can receive that. If someone comes to me and criticizes the principle, I can be like, don't want to hear it. The principle's right. Maybe I didn't do it exactly the right way, but there's nothing wrong with what the Bible says. So, that brings us back now to this text here. How are the principles, because this is really what's going on. Joab comes to this guy, this soldier. Now, anyone know who Joab is? You know who Joab is? He is, in what rank would you give to Joab? General. And he's like general of the army general. Okay, so he's kind of the top dog. And also, anyone know how he's related to David? He's a subject. Yeah, well, he is. But anyway, familial relationship. First cousin. So he's pretty tight with David in family way. And he's the general of the army. And he's talking to this lowly grunt soldier. Okay, someone who's probably in the army, maybe the best thing he ever did in life was maybe as an MP or something like that, and trying to get Mike's attention back there. And so here's this lowly grunt soldier, and the general of all this, okay, it's not the American army, but I'm just putting this image in your mind. So here he comes, all these stars on his shoulders and everything, walks up this little one-stripe little grunt soldier, and he begins questioning him. Well, this soldier isn't going to get really flippant or disrespectful because, you know, he kind of likes his head attached to his shoulders. And so he's not going to, but yet, he's not going to go along with this bad advice. And he's going to, in a very nice way, talk about some principles why he's not listening to what Joab is telling him. So what are the principles this soldier identified that allowed him to reject Joab's bad advice? And I tell you what, Joab told him to do was very, very very bad advice, with a capital B. So how could this soldier, this little grunt soldier, reject this bad advice from this general Joab? Well, he identified some principles and stuck to it. What principles? Well, I see three of them in our text I want to share with you that I think are very clear that he's talking about. So that brings us now to our text again. 2 Samuel chapter 18. And let's go down to verse 11. And we'll be right in that area for the most of the study. Sometimes water tastes real good. 2 Samuel 18, look at verse 11. And Joab said to the man that told him, "And behold, thou sawest him, and why didst thou not smite him there to the ground?" Now notice the next thing he says, "And I would have given thee 10 shekels of silver and a girdle." And the man said to Joab, "Though I should receive 1,000 shekels, yet would I not put forth my hand against the king's son." Well, the first principle he identified that allowed him to reject the bad advice, number one, is this. Personal integrity is more important than financial gain. What you offer me doesn't matter. Doing right matters. I'm not killing the king's son. Now, and he doesn't say it this way because, you know, he's talking to the general. But he could have said, if he says something to another grunt soldier, he could have said, "Are you out of your mind? You expect me to kill the king's son? Really? There ain't no money in the world worth that. That's wrong to do." So personal integrity is more important than financial gain. That's an important principle in making our decisions that we can go back to and say, maybe I didn't do it exactly right, but I didn't put money ahead. I put doing right ahead, my integrity ahead. I put that as the focus, and that's a good principle. One of the most often criticisms is how we could have financially benefited from doing it differently. "Well, you know, if you'd have done it like I told you to do it, you'd have saved more money. You'd have made more money." Now listen to me, and let me prepare you, okay? Get like square in your seat so you don't fall out of it. Plant your feet so you don't slide down. Let me just tell you this. Money is not everything. It's not everything. In fact, it's really not much of anything except what we make out of it. People kill themselves over a piece of paper that says, "In God we trust," and they're not trusting God. If you're trusting the government, that's also not good either. And so here they are holding onto this paper that's backed up by supposedly a $21 trillion deficit government. And so we're living and killing ourselves over this financial gain instead of really understanding what's more important is my integrity. Who I am as a human being is a whole lot more important than the money I make. Now, there is nothing wrong, if we're making decisions, there is nothing wrong with financial benefit. It's not that having money is an evil thing. So there's nothing wrong with financial benefit unless it requires compromising our principles. And when people say, "Hey, you could have saved money, you could have made money," and they're the second guessers over here, usually the implication is, if you'd have done what I said, which means something underhanded, something sneaky, something that's maybe dishonest, something that is that doesn't line up with the Bible, that doesn't line up with a good Christian testimony, and all those things should be rejected. It doesn't matter how much money it puts in your pocket. I'm going to give you this statement. In the whole Bible study, this may be my favorite statement. Ready? The hallmark of a believer's testimony is not his bank statement, but his biblical stand. Hope that's what they know about you. Where you stand biblically. Not your statements you get from the bank. Let's look at some verses about this just to drive home the point. Proverbs chapter 22. Most likely the go-to verse in something like this. Proverbs 22, look with me in verse 1. A good name is rather to be chosen than, you see what the next word is before the word riches? Great riches. Because people say, well, yeah, I wouldn't sell out for $10. Okay, what would you sell out for? 100? 1,000? Million? Billion? Trillion? Do you have a price? Because if you have a price, I'm sure Satan can figure out a way to get you to compromise over it. Great riches. A good name is rather to be chosen than great riches, and loving favor rather than silver and gold. Let's look at one more verse. 2 Timothy chapter 2. 2 Timothy chapter 2. And then go down to verse number 4. Is that where I want to be? That is not where I want to be. Hang on. Did I tell you, James, how much I appreciate your testimony? It was a great testimony. Yes, it was. And hang on. Well, I got the gate almost finished on my fence, I tell you that. And I'll have to find it again. I can't find it quick enough. It's something that says, don't live for money, live for Jesus. All right, so as I was saying, I apologize. I don't know why I can't. It's probably right there I'm looking at, I just can't see it fast enough. The hallmark of a believer's testimony is not his bank statement, but his biblical stand. Let me give you a couple quick things about this. Get a little egg off my face and move on to point two. Any decision that is made, now notice the wording here, what I'm about to say. Any decision that is made strictly on gaining money, that's the whole focus of the decision. Any decision that is made strictly on gaining money will usually be a bad decision. If that's all you're thinking about is getting money, you're probably going to make a bad decision because there's a lot more to be considered. Any advice, so that's any decision that's made. Any advice that is made strictly on gaining money should be considered bad advice. If you have someone, all they're talking about is getting money, you might as well just say, I'm not listening to you. There's more to life than money. Money is not evil. The love of money is evil, but money itself isn't. But we're not going to make money everything about money. So personal integrity is more important than financial gain. That's the first big principle. Then there's the second one. Let's go back to 2 Samuel 18 and look with me in verse 12. And the man said unto Joab, though I should receive 1,000 shekels of silver in my hand, yet would I not put forth my hand against the king's son. For in our hearing, the king charged thee and Abishai and Hittai, saying, beware that none touch a young man Absalom. Otherwise, I should have wrought falsehood against my own life. Now, watch what he says next. For there is no matter hid from the king, and thou thyself would have set thyself against me. So the second big principle that he made his decision on in rejecting Joab's bad advice, one is, personal integrity is more important than the money you're offering me. Number two is this, sin will eventually be found out. When people are trying to tell you to do something and it's underhanded or sneaky, you might as well just don't listen to them. Well, let me tell you how you can get away with it. Really? You have a way of getting rid of God? Because that's what's going to take to get around your sin, to get away with your sin. Because there's a God who sits in heaven who deals, especially born-again believers, he deals with his children. And you cannot be doing what is wrong and think you can get away with it. Sin will eventually be found out. Let me ask you a question tonight. How many accounts do we need in the Bible before we understand that we, as God's children, cannot get away with sin? Is not Achan enough? Did Achan get away with his sin? No. How about Ananias and Sapphira? Two people know. I'm not going to tell anyone. I can't do the falsetto at the moment. Okay. So she has a little bit of a bass voice. I'm not going to tell anyone. Well, I'm not going to tell anyone either. And so they have this plot. No one else knows. Think about this. No one else knows. He walks in the church and Peter calls on the carpet about it. You know what that is? That's God. Some people say, well, how do you know? I'm not the Gestapo. I don't have listening of devices in your house. I'm not peeking through your blinds. But let me tell you this, God has a way of revealing things and making things very clear. And it's hard to explain. It's hard to put it down into tangible explanation. He just reveals things because that's what God does. I'm telling you, sin will eventually be found out. And this soldier knew it. He said, really? Joab, really? I'm going to kill the king's son, and the king's not going to know about it. Really, you're going to give me a bunch of money, I'm going to be living in some castle somewhere, and everything's going to be good, and the king's not going to know anything? It ain't going to happen that way. Look with me in Luke chapter 12. I say this trembling, because once I mess up a verse, then every verse I'm just like nervous over now. Luke chapter 12. And I'm fighting the urge to go back to 2 Timothy. I know it's there somewhere, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to focus on this point. Luke chapter 12, look with me in verse 1. In the meantime, when there were gathered together an innumerable multitude of people, insomuch that they trod one upon another, he began to say to his disciples, first of all, beware ye of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. For there is nothing covered that shall not be revealed, neither hid that shall not be known. Therefore, whatsoever you have spoken in darkness shall be heard in the light. And that which you have spoken in the ear in closets shall be proclaimed upon the housetops. Basically, what he's saying is, you're not going to get away with it. You might as well live right because you're not going to get away with your sin. Sin will eventually be found out. This is an important principle that this soldier is pointing out to Joab. So, we put in some sub-points here. There are decisions that have to be made. And because of confidentiality, not every reason can be disclosed. Okay, we understand that. That's not what we're talking about, but I'm putting that there so people understand. There are some things. I see this because I'm a pastor. I see it in that pastoral situation. It's in other situations as well. It doesn't involve anyone else. It involves this person's personal life, and there's some things, and you can't tell everyone that, you don't stand up and tell everyone about everything that someone tells you. That's gossip. And not everything needs to be aired out that way. So some things, because of confidentiality, you have to take care of things or make decisions, and you keep certain confidences. Okay, that's understandable. I don't think that's newsflash for anyone. But, here's where we're going though. But, decisions should not be made that requires you to cover up sin so that sin isn't dealt with. That's not what confidence is one thing. Covering up sin is something totally different. If you're making decisions that include covering up sin, it's going to come back and haunt you. It's going to come back on you. Eventually, that sin that you're trying to cover up will be found out and you will suffer the consequences. Now, we mentioned Achan. We mentioned Ananias and Sapphira. I kind of stopped after that. There's others. How about Judas Iscariot? His sin was found out. Is it I? Is it I? Is it I? Is it I? And then everyone knew it's Judas. How about David? Did David's sin get discovered? Nathan, what did Nathan? Thou art the man! Whoa! How did you know? Well, God revealed it. So there are consequences. So sin's going to be found out. So I'm listening to advice. How do I know it's... Okay, there are some good advice after the decision, but there are some bad advice. What bad advice after the decision? Things that say, hey, go ahead and do it this way. Next time, do it this way. It'll be cheaper. I know it's not really the right thing. I know it's kind of lying and sneaky and underhanded, but no one will know. No one will know means they're going to find out and you're going to pay the price for it. That's the translation of that phrase. Now, let's back up to this confidentiality versus covering of sin. Because we do have some issues in our society, even in our churches, about covering up things that should not be covered up. So let me give you a rule of thumb or just a good principle to go by. Covering up actions that directly hurt someone else. Now, in this story, it's killing Absalom. That's really hurting someone else. But if we're covering up things that are other people have been hurt, and we're trying to cover up and pretend it didn't happen. So covering up actions that directly hurt someone else is covering up sin. And just in case you don't know where I'm going, no abuse should ever be covered up. Amen. Ever. Well, you know, it's really going to hurt the church if they found out. It's not about the church, it's about doing right. No abuse should ever be covered up. And hopefully we get beyond that. That's been a problem in our society, a problem in our churches. So sin will eventually be found out. That's the second principle. Then there's a third principle that this young man understood. Let's go back to chapter 18. Again, look at verse 12. And we'll look at verse 12 and verse 13 again. And the man said unto Joab, though I should receive 1,000 shekels of silver in my hand, yet would I not put forth my hand against the king's son. For in our hearing, the king charged thee and Abishai and Ittai, saying, beware that none touch the young man Absalom. Otherwise I should have wrought falsehood against my own life. For there is no matter hid from the king. Now he knows this statement. And thou thyself would have set thyself against me. Here's a third statement. Number three is this. Doing right will be criticized by those doing wrong. Let me give you a couple of verses, and I'll explain why I'm saying this in this situation. Proverbs 28. Proverbs chapter 28. Look with me in verse number 4. Again, this is one of the go-to verses when you think about this statement about doing right will be criticized by those doing wrong. Proverbs 28, look at verse 4. They that forsake the law praise the wicked, but such as keep the law contend with them, them being the wicked, or those who forsake the law, which would be kind of equate to the same there. Let's go to the New Testament, Matthew chapter 12. We'll stay away from 2 Timothy for a while. Matthew chapter 12. Still got bad memories about that one. Matthew chapter 12. Verse 34. O generation of vipers, how can ye, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. A good man out of the good treasure of the heart bringeth forth good things. And an evil man out of the evil treasure, bringeth forth evil things. But I say unto you that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give an account thereof in the day of judgment. For by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned. Now, this is the crux of what this man is telling Joab here. He's saying it politely, saying it nicely, because he's just a soldier and Joab's the general. But the soldier is politely telling Joab that they both knew the king's command. I know what the king said. You know what the king said. Okay? We both know what the king said. And we both know that your job is to enforce what the king said. So we both knew what the king said. And if I went against the king, you'd be the one who's enforcing the king, which means you'd be the one who would be killing me. You would not be handing me 10 shekels of silver. You would be chopping my head off. So doing right is going to be criticized by those doing wrong. Joab was doing wrong. Joab's intention was to kill Absalom. David did not want Absalom to die. Now, we could go into a long dissertation of should Absalom have died? Was Joab really kind of doing the right thing by killing? That doesn't matter in this case, in this right what we're talking about. What we're talking about is that David gave a specific command. Don't kill Absalom. Joab is going to go kill Absalom. He's done this before. Joab has kind of a tendency to do his own thing. Joab had already decided, I'm going to kill Absalom. I know what the king said. I'm going to go kill Absalom. He's going to do wrong. Joab is going to do wrong. And Joab begins criticizing the soldier who did right. Did the soldier kill Absalom? No, that was the right thing. Is Joab going to kill him? Yes, that's the wrong thing. And if the soldier had done the wrong thing, Joab would have hypocritically killed the soldier, even though Joab wanted Absalom to die anyways. So the soldier is identifying this trait in Joab. He's understanding that Joab knew what was right, and that Joab was bent on doing what was wrong, and that the one doing wrong was criticizing the one who did right. So he's underlining this principle here. Doing right will be criticized by those doing wrong. Joab's advice was wrong that he's given to the soldier because Joab's heart was wrong. His words were wrong because his heart was wrong. His advice was wrong because his heart was wrong. So what does that kind of apply to us? Those who criticize the decisions you make based on biblical principle are simply revealing their unwillingness to live by those biblical principles. If you made a decision based on biblical principle and someone comes along and second guesses it and tells you all the things you did wrong, I'm looking at the negative critical person here. The problem isn't that they're thinking you made a bad decision. The thing is, they don't agree with living by biblical principle. That's what their issue is. Let me just go off on a tangent or side road. We'll say it nice. Let me just give you a little hobby horse here. You know, the big problem is this book right here. That's what people are against. Okay, it's not. Okay, just bear with me. It's not statues. It's this book. This is what they're after. Now, Brother Lou said this on Sunday. I know he kind of said it on the side and he just kept moving. Let me tell you, whatever's going on in our nation has nothing to do with what you see on the news. It's a spiritual battle that is designed to stop the local churches from what we're doing. That's always, and he said, how can I say that? Because that's always the battle. You think Satan really cares about the Jeb Stuart statue? You really think he cares? He could care less. He's creating a firestorm always pointed to the work of God. Because we stand for what's right. We look at what they're doing and saying, really? This is not protest. This is looting, rioting. This is, you're bringing in the socialistic, communistic stuff, which is anti-Bible type of thinking. We're standing for what God has said. We're the target. Now, we're sitting here thinking, oh, they're killing each other. No, they're just getting things ready for us. So that's really where the battle is. And I think we're somewhat clueless of it. It has nothing to do with the virus. It's not the first time we've ever had a virus. Won't be the last time. Probably be more often now it works so well for them. It's not to do with the virus. It has nothing to do with, I'm not trying to be unkind, but it's not is it George Floyd? It's not his death. That was terrible. It should not have happened. Okay, if the policeman is found guilty, he should be sentenced. He murdered from all appearance. Okay, I'm not the judge, but from all appearance, on my perspective, he murdered this guy. And it's terrible. But I tell you, that is not the big problem in our country. It happens. It happens. But we have 600,000 babies being murdered by abortion. There are bigger things going on. And it always goes back to those who are living by biblical principle. Those who are living by biblical principle are the ones who are being attacked. And they're being attacked because it reveals their unwillingness to live by biblical principle. They don't want to be told how to live. They don't want to submit to a holy God. They want to live the way they want. And when we're trying to live by biblical principle, now that's where their criticism comes from. So that's a little bit stronger than my notes are at the moment, but that is the bigger picture. But those who criticize the decisions you make based on biblical principle are simply revealing their unwillingness to live by those biblical principles. So those who live by fear will criticize those who live by faith. Those who live by selfishness will criticize those who live by selflessness. And those who live in pride will criticize those who live in humility. That's kind of what it boils down to. And this soldier understood it. Joab, your issue is you want to kill Absalom. You're trying to make me the sacrificial goat here. And I'm not having it. You're not helping me learn how to make a better decision. You're trying to kill me, and I'm not going to go along with it. So doing right will be criticized by those doing wrong. All right, let's bring it to a conclusion. Being clear and firm on biblical principle not only allows you better clarity in knowing what good advice prior to decision is. So if I'm clear on biblical principle, and when people are giving me advice, I can say, okay, yeah, that lines up with the Bible. That's good. That's good advice. So it gives me clarity before I make the decision. It also gives clarity in knowing what good advice is after making the decision. Because someone says, well, you should have. No, I shouldn't have, because that's wrong to do. I'm not going to do that. That's wrong. Okay, that's not even, get out of here. Okay, so it gives better clarity before and after the decision. Now, this does not mean you cannot learn from the decision, or that decision cannot have been made better. So we're not saying just because you know biblical principle is guaranteed that you make the perfect decision every time. It just helps clarity making trying to make the best decision possible. And you learn because people say, you know what, you're right about the principle, but you're not right about how you really applied it. It could be applied a little bit better here. But still, we're honoring the principle. And because we're honoring the principle, we do not have to be fearful in making decisions, because we're living by principle, or regret making principle decisions. Well, it didn't turn out what you thought. No, but I didn't get the principle exactly right, but I don't regret, because I did the best I could at the moment, at that time that I knew. So ultimately, principle decisions allow better decisions to be made and better learning from the decisions after they are made. It all goes back to the biblical principles determines good advice, bad advice, good decisions, bad decisions. All right, let's pray.